Welcome to the Faith Element Podcast for the August 13, 2017 session, focusing on Genesis 37, verses 1 through 4 and 12 through 28, Dreams to Nightmares. I'm David Cassidy.
I'm Nikki Hardiman.
I'm Darian Duckworth.
And I'm Bert Montgomery.
Daniel is away on vacation this week. We trust that he's being wise about the application of sunscreen. And
let us pray.
And it's the most important thing aside from the quality of seafood whenever you're at the beach. But Daniel will be back with us for the next episode. But our good friend Darian Duckworth is back with us tonight. Darian is the pastor of the First United Methodist Church of West Point, Mississippi, and has become something of a regular on our podcast. Welcome back, Darian.
Hey, thanks. Good to be back. And nice to hear the word sort of a regular. I like that phrase.
Yes, well, we do too. We always enjoy having you with us. And now, in the last podcast, your favorite pet was vocal, right? He had some things to say.
Yes.
So how is he handling the Mississippi heat this summer?
You know, he is handling it really well. Of course, he's lived in Mississippi his whole life, but funny you mention that because today I took him to the church with me to see the kids and that were there for a day camp, and they petted him, and there is dog hair all over the sanctuary now.
Oh.
So I've got to take my super vacuum cleaner up there tomorrow and literally vacuum the sanctuary floor because they played with him so much and petted him so much that his hair is everywhere. So so he is shedding beautifully, which means he's staying cool.
He's staying cool. Good. Well,
yes. I'm just interested. You've never asked how Derry and I are handling the Mississippi heat.
No, I haven't.
He only cares about Isaac.
He only cares about Isaac.
Isaac. Well, I saw this photo you posted on Facebook of Isaac sitting in the chair instead of on the doggy bed.
Yeah, he
was that in your office?
Yeah, he has a bed in my office, but he prefers to sit in the chair, which is also now covered in dog hair. So I'll vacuum it too when I when I take the super vacuum.
Well, we will all survive in our own ways this summer. Well, we have finished up with a series in the Psalms, and we are now turning to the beginning of a well-known narrative. It'll be our focus for the next couple of weeks. Bert, could you help us get started?
Sure. And it is from the book of Genesis, chapter 37. I don't know if you said that already, but I want to throw that out there. Some of my all-time favorite songs have come out of bands of brothers, the Allman Brothers, of course, the Isley Brothers, even the Statler Brothers. No, really, I'm a big fan of the Lou DeWitt years, and if that means anything at all to you listeners, email me. We need to connect. But when I reread our story today of Joseph and his brothers, the first record album I reached for to inspire me was by the Smothers Brothers. Yeah, you remember Tom and Dick Smothers, the brilliant comedians? And one of their most famous skits of all time is called Mom Always Liked You Best. And Tom starts arguing that their mother always liked super sibling Dickie the best. And when Dick tries to argue otherwise, Tom starts listing examples. My mom and my brother, Tom explains, my mom and my brother used to get together and they'd say, we don't like you. And then Dickie reminded them that he gave Tom Lincoln Logs to play with. Some of you might have to Google Lincoln Logs. Do they still make that for kids? I don't know.
Yes,
but
they
anyway,
do.
They
yes.
do. Good, good.
Yes.
And then Tom pointed out that Dickie put termites in those Lincoln Logs. So, and I'll, you know what? I'm just going to add a link. We can add a link. David, I'm going to send you a link of the Smothers Brothers doing Mom Always Liked You Best. You can find many, many far worse ways to waste 4 or 5 minutes of your time than laughing out loud with the Smothers Brothers. Trust me. Now, unfortunately, there's not a lot of laughter, or probably any for that matter, in our biblical story of a bunch of brothers who knew without any doubt that Dad always liked Joseph best. It's a tragic story, which eventually, over decades, does get around to having a happy ending. Our text today begins with a long, incredible story involving polygamy, marital favoritism, parental favoritism, a young boy with incredible dreams and a magnificent coat, plans of murder, sibling rivalry, jealousy, lies and deceit, selling a brother into slavery, accusations of attempted rape and jail and privilege and royalty and power, and the chance for revenge and forgiveness, and the providence of God moving and weaving and even directing and responding through the unbelievable messiness and ugliness of it all. Now, the longer I live, and I'm getting close to 50 now, and the more places I've been, and the ways I sense of where I might be going in my journey based on where I've been in my journey, it's all the twists and the turns and the ups and the downs, my hopes and my dreams and my disappointments, my failures, the bad places in my life. As I look back, I can still see the hand of God in it all. I didn't always see it at certain times, but when I look back, I can. And of course, nothing I've experienced comes close to anything like Joseph in his story, but I do know a little bit of what it's like to have big dreams and to have huge setbacks and to experience things coming full circle. Decades later, despite my mistakes, despite the setbacks thrust upon me by outside forces beyond my control, none of which I blame upon God. Well, okay, maybe at certain times I did blame God. Yet, I still believe in God's providence. And this story about Joseph, I think, can resonate with all of us to some degree or another for that very reason. And it all begins with a band of brothers from another mother joining together and saying, "Dad always liked you and your mama best."
All right, everybody, full confession. We just spent the last 10 minutes talking and we're going to have to cut it all out because none of it's usable. But what I realized while we were talking is that looking at the stories in the book of Genesis, particularly starting with these families that began our faith, is really hard. There's a lot of hard things that happen in these families, beginning with Abraham and Sarah and Hagar, and going on to Isaac and Rebekah and the trauma between their two sons, Jacob and Esau. And now we get Jacob with his four wives and tons of children and all of the favoritism that happens there. And that family dysfunction gets played all the way through to the end of the book. And it, you know, we can sit around and joke about and talk about how all the dysfunction in this family, but the truth of the matter is this is how our faith began. And talking about their story is hard. It is in one way, it offers us a lot of grace because that means that even with the dysfunction that we find in our own lives and our own families, God can still be at work. But it also is really hard because we have dysfunction in our own families and we can see ourselves in the stories of these people and we have to confront that. So like full confession here for Faith Element team, like, this is hard. Talking about these stories in the book of Genesis provides so much fruit for conversation, but it also gives us a really hard stuff to talk about.
Yeah. And, you know, Nikki, I think a lot of that has to do with the way we have molded a certain form of Christianity to be so moralistic. Everything's so clearly right and so clearly wrong. Mm. And the Christian side is always so clearly right, and we don't do these things, we don't talk about these things, bad people do those things and all that. And we don't have, or we, even if people, we're not very biblically literate, we think we are, because we've been told how to go back and look at the Bible to find a specific word so that I know what I'm supposed to do today, kind of thing. And we're not taught to read as stories. And so we don't know how to deal with this, so we don't pay attention to it when we see this stuff. We're looking for a nugget of truth, a nugget of wisdom to guide us for today. And in doing so, we can't deal with, you know, biblical family values gets tossed around. Oh. Let's just look to the Bible. Well, you know, when we look to the Bible, it gets messy,
it's really
which
messy.
Is good, because if we're honest, our lives and our world is messy, mm-hmm. and God isn't concerned. Well, I'm not going to say God isn't concerned, but it's not about us getting it right and not being messy before we can relate to God.
God's not surprised by the messy.
Yeah. God is not surprised by messy, and God is in the middle of all the messiness. Mm-hmm. And we don't have
God
to run
do
from
things.
It.
Within the messiness.
Yeah. And the messiness isn't going to cut us off from God.
So this is one of those weird, this is one of those stories where it's really hard to do the old find yourself in the story, right? You ever, I mean, so a lot of times we watch movies or we watch shows and we, you know, it's written for you to kind of relate to one of the characters, but I'm not sure I want to relate to any of these characters.
None of them. Nobody comes out looking real good in this story.
No, they don't.
Because Joseph brags about what he's got.
Right. Even the victim is not very desirable.
But yeah, you know, I got along with my parents. My sister and I got along fine. I don't know what sibling rivalry, like that kind of level is. I had an older sister and I'm the younger brother, so there's a little stuff. But, you know, I don't understand that.
I'll understand that. I was the favorite child and deservedly so.
We all believe that, David.
I'm just joking.
But you know that the idea that God is in the mess, I mean, ultimately, when we look at the whole story of Joseph from beginning to end, it comes to the punch where it says, what you intended for evil, God intended for good. And there's lots of ways to look at that, and there's lots of ways to understand that and interpret that. But ultimately, I mean, David named it a few minutes ago, God can work with the mess. God can work with even our dysfunction and help mold and make good out of it. And I think that's the purpose of the Joseph story in Genesis, is to talk about and demonstrate the ways that God exists in the middle of our mess and our dysfunction and our lives, and is working with us, sometimes in spite of us. But God is working.
And that's different than God causing the mess.
Right. And I think that's important. Right.
Yeah.
Or the evil. I mean, you know, yes, the brothers planning to kill.
Right.
And thankfully there's, my mind went blank, Reuben. Is it Reuben? Reuben. Who has the idea?
Judah.
You know, Judah.
Judah, thank you. No. And Judah's betraying everybody, right? Well, let's just not kill him. And Judah's secretly thinking, I'm going to go back and I'm going to get him out, and, you know.
Right.
Whatever. But he's not standing up to his brothers up front. But you know, that's evil. And then they sell him to slavery, and they just assume he's, and they tell dad he's dead, you know, he's gone, wolves ate him, whatever. So, I mean, that's flat out evil. But even in the midst of that, we talked about before the recording started, we used the word theodicy, which is the fancy theological word for why is there suffering and why do bad things happen and does God cause it? If God's omnipotent and good, and why does it, you know, God didn't, our Calvinist friends might get mad at us, but, you know, I don't think God planted the anger and jealousy in the hearts of the brothers, and that God planted the pride in Joseph about his coat, and God planted started all this to make this all happen this way. This is stuff, our messiness. This is our doing. This is humanity's doing, but it doesn't stop God from still being present and still finding a way that what we intended for evil, God can still work God's way for good.
Yeah, and especially when you think about these stories in Genesis in the Judeo-Christian tradition, that this is the family Jesus came from. This is the family that God chose to be born into. And Nikki, I love how you referred to the dysfunctional family, because when I preach Genesis as a sermon series, I title it the dysfunctional family. And the whole premise is, you think your family's crazy? Look at the one Jesus came from. And that's exactly what... That's exactly, I mean, when you go back many generations, that this is what God chose to come into. And it is, it's just, it's wild and it's crazy. But the thing about it is it also, we began with dysfunction, but we also began with just really great storytelling here. I think that's one of the things I love about Genesis is you have a few of those moments like, what man intended for evil, God used for good, to use the old King James, New King James language. But you've got some moments like that. But overall, Genesis is just telling a story. It's not interpreting for us along the way. It's just saying, this is what happened. And I think that's missing a lot. We spend so much time trying to interpret and say, this means this, that means that, instead of just saying, here's the story, make what you want of it. I think Genesis opens us up, and then this story, especially to dreaming, you know, going back to the whole thing of this whole passage being about Joseph's dream, you know, don't put a rubber stamp on it. Enter into the creativity of what the story could be telling.
Well, and I find that to be the beauty of the biblical narrative, right? Like the idea that this really is the story of how Hebrews and Christians see God interacting with the world, and it is a story, and stories can be interpreted in lots of different ways, and they can mean lots of different things depending on where we enter the story and how we connect with it now versus 20 years from now. I find that to be incredibly, incredibly powerful, connecting to it as a narrative rather than a book of do's and don'ts.
And I think Bert was alluding to something similar to that earlier when he was talking about we often don't see the workings of God until we look back. You know, as we're living the story, our own stories, we often can't see anything but the chaos or the evil or the injustice or the, you know, we see what's happening, doggone it. But it's not until later that we can look back and see how God was, in spite of us, you know, often working through that, bringing something good out of it in spite of how awful it probably truly is.
We don't take dreams very seriously in our culture. And of course, in the biblical context, dreams are everywhere. And this is how people, it's how God spoke. This is how people understood that God was speaking. Either, you know, predicting what's going to happen, or very figurative type things, like today's dream, like Joseph's dreams, you know. And I mean, I've had some vivid dreams, and I've some as a kid that I could still remember, and some as an adult that I would write about in journal because I didn't want to forget them. They were very meaningful to me. When my wife was pregnant with our first child, I kept having very vivid dreams. Chicks appeared in my backyard, and that they kept jumping into my arms, and then I kept dropping them, and they kept dying, and this dream kept coming to me. And I went to one of my professors who did counseling and stuff, and he was really into Jung and dream analysis and stuff. Says, well, you're afraid of this new life and caring for a new life that you're, you know, and all this stuff. And I'm like, wow. So I started paying attention to dreams, you know, but, you know, the dreams I remember, like, you know, when I would dream about meeting Alice Cooper, you know, which hasn't happened yet. I'm waiting, you know, and this is 30 or 40 years ago. So I'm waiting, Alice, if you're listening. But, you know, how many of us have dreams, you know, we may not have dreams about stars bowing down, you know, and that kind of stuff to us, but do we have dreams, and what are they trying to tell us about who we are? What is God trying to tell us about who we are and about our circumstances? What are some of your experiences with dreams, and have any of them come true after two or three decades like Joseph's?
You really want to meet Alice Deja Cooper, don't you?
Yes, Alice, give me a call.
No, I really started paying attention to my dreams after taking a dreams class in seminary. And we followed the Jungian theory of dreams, and we We did so with kind of, you began dream interpretations with kind of the idea that the only person who can really interpret a dream is the one who dreamed it. And when you start there, it makes it possible for people to kind of contribute to your understanding of your dream in a really non-judgmental kind of way. But ultimately, in that process, I learned that, you know, scientifically, dreams are doing a lot for us. They're helping us process our day. They're helping us kind of work through all the stuff that's happened to us. But if we can look at it another way, it does help reveal things about ourselves and what our motivations might be, our fears might be, our hopes might be. It's just kind of learning to listen to them, which takes practice and attentiveness and being able to remember your dreams, which not everybody can. But I do think that, you know, just like everything else in the created world, it's how God made us. God made us to dream and while we're sleeping. And I have to believe that there's purpose to that, that there is some kind of thing that is happening, whether I know it or not, that's helpful and helping me. But that comes out of what I understand about God and how God made the world. So I don't know.
Yeah, I grew up. My earliest memories of dreams were just if you have a dream that you remember, you write it down, you pray and ask God to show you what it means if you need to know it, and then you wait. Like that was, I grew up in the charismatic mm-hmm. movement of the 80s where it was, that was just a normal, that's what was normally taught. Dreams are often God, not always, but often God trying to speak, and you just wait for mm-hmm. God to show you what it is. And it's funny how I still kind of have that approach to it now. I dream all the time, and I keep a notepad by the bed so that if I wake up, I can go ahead and write down what I remember. Doesn't mm-hmm. always happen. A lot of times I go back to sleep thinking that the dream will pick up where it left off, and there'll be some kind of resolution. But yeah, I don't know. Thinking about dreams, you know, if you think of dreams as the divine encountering you, I mean, that's holy ground that you're on, you know, when you're thinking back on the dream and you're reflecting on it. And when we look at this passage and Joseph sharing this dream with his brothers and we see what the reaction is, it's like he's sharing something that's very personal and very sacred. And you have to be careful with that. You know, that's one thing mm-hmm. that you can see happen with his brothers. So yeah, that's what I grew up with. And like I said, I love dreams and it's funny how that's carried over even to adulthood where, you know, where I'm very careful. I don't share my dreams with anybody. It's like they stay in the journal because I've always thought of it as a holy place.
But you know, we all remember much more vividly, a lot of us, when those dreams get ugly and they become nightmares. Mm-hmm.
Right.
I mean, you could wake up in sweats. You could wake up running, falling out of bed because you're trying to jump out of something. Mm-hmm. And the terror when you wake up and then realizing that you're safe in this room and it's not real. But sometimes it still seems real and it takes you a while to calm down. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Heart's beating and all that stuff. And nightmares, sometimes they're recurring nightmares that we've had that are dealing with not just unpleasant things. Like when I had the dreams with chicks and stuff, it was unpleasant. It was nagging, but it wasn't a nightmare. Mm-hmm. Like when you're being chased or whatever. And yeah, I mean, I think that's dealing with a lot of, I mean, Nikki, you're the one that had class.
Well, I mean, I am no expert at all, but I can tell you something I learned. I had a recurring nightmare that would take different forms, but ultimately there was a man who would show up in my dreams. Sometimes I knew the man, sometimes I didn't, but somehow I always knew it was the same character. I mean, he'd show up in my dreams and I mean, it was bad. Like it was, they were violent. They were things that like you wouldn't let children, they were not G-rated at all. Like it was violent. And violence in my dreams. And I hated it. I hate it when he would show up and it was really hard. And so in that dreams class, I explored it a little bit and I spent some time talking with my professor about it. And the most graceful thing I learned in that class is that even that our dreams are always there to help us, no matter what, like bad dreams, good dreams, the purpose is always for good, which that was a little hard to think of when I was having these dreams of this violent person. But over time and working with it, I finally realized that this violent dream would show up when I was not taking good care of myself. And so ultimately, it was my psyche saying, hey, you are not taking care of yourself. Start paying attention. And once I made that connection, he stopped showing up. It was so interesting. And then I think one time after that, he showed up again and I went, I'm not taking very good care of myself. And so it kicked me into gear, into making sure that I cared for myself. And he went away. And I haven't dreamed about him in a long, long time. And so I learned that even those nightmares were helpful. And they were intended for good, even though they were terrible in the moment. But I will say, you said, you have a nightmare and you wake up and you realize that you're really safe. That is, unless, like, I had a dream I was falling over a cliff one time and I woke up and I was falling out of my bed. So I wasn't actually safe. So
we talked literally about our dreams and our nightmares. And the title of the section of this lesson is Dreams and Nightmares, because of Joseph, his life, he had these dreams of where he was going in life, but his life turned out to be a living nightmare for a lot of it.
Yeah.
I have no idea where he's going with that. But
I think it's a good place to go with this, Bert, because, nightmares that we have when we're asleep, that's different than living an actual nightmare.
Yeah.
And the truth is, like, whether Joseph should have shared his dream or not, certainly we could talk about that all day long. But ultimately, he shared that and his brothers hated him for that and many other reasons. And so they acted out against him and sent him into this life. I mean, he was completely separated from his family, his culture, everything that he knew. And he was at the beck and call of these people that he was sold to. He was in jail. I mean, it was a very, very horrid life. And I think it, we read the story, we know the ending that feels like it has a positive resolution. But the truth is, like, he lived a really, really difficult life that I don't think any of us would have chosen. And sometimes it's hard to know what to do with that.
Mm-hmm. And it is hard to know what to do with it, because it's easy for us to look back as we're reading it and say that all this had to happen this way in order to have this wonderful ending in our scriptures. And, I don't think God wanted it to happen that way. I don't think God intended for it to happen that way. That line that you spoke earlier, and I think, David, you quoted it, that Joseph said all this happened, that what you intended for evil, God made good, or intended for good. It made me think immediately of, and I keep coming back to this in a lot of our different podcasts, of the Holocaust. And, please don't try to tell me God intended the Holocaust to happen for this way. But when you read Elie Wiesel and Viktor Frankl, and Dietrich Bonhoeffer, and the grace that they experience and the hope that they find and the strength through the darkest of the darkness that we can't even imagine to write about that touch us today, I wouldn't say, thank God for the Holocaust that we've got this great piece of work from Elie Wiesel. I would gladly, and I'm sure Elie Wiesel would gladly give that up, so that he wouldn't have had to endure that. And I think it's too easy. We deal with Joseph too easily, the story of Joseph and the evil, the darkness, the nightmare, too easily, because we wrap it up too easily and we read back into it too easily. But even then, I mean, that's a powerful, powerful statement, that what we human beings intend for evil, that God is still there and can still work good through the end. But we've got to be careful not to go back and read that God caused it all and therefore it was all necessary.
Right. We probably react differently to our dreams. We have different dreams. But for all of us, we experience them as something rather involuntary, right? They happen. We don't choose them. We don't outline them. And that's part of the mystery of them, and also the interest in them and the fear of them, right? Because we can't control them. We don't control them. But truthfully, if we look at this story and we look at our own lives in the mirror, we realize there's a lot of involuntariness in our lives, things we don't choose that happen to us or happen around us. The words that I've heard us all say over and over as we've looked at this particular passage is the marvelous presence of God throughout our lives. And as bad as it may be, it never is so bad that God cannot work within it. Thank you all for a really interesting conversation tonight around this text.
Thanks, David.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Faith Element is a service of Faith Lab.